Good morning. I appreciated the good song service we had. We're slightly few in number, but we had a good song service, and I appreciated Brother Kenny's prayer, and I stand in need of your prayers as we go through this morning that the Lord might show us his presence, shower his holy manna on us, as we say. I've got a subject on my mind. I spoke on it once before. It's been several years ago, but it's on my mind in a little different way today. Let me read to you a verse out of the 21st chapter of Matthew. 21st chapter of Matthew, and all of you are generally familiar with what occurred here. Jesus walked into the temple and didn't like what he saw. Matthew 21 and 12. And Jesus went to the temple of God and cast out all them that sold and bought in the temple, and overthrew the tables of the money changers and the seats of them that sold doves, and said unto them, It is written, My house shall be called a house of prayer, but ye have made it a den of thieves. He's quoting there from Isaiah and Jeremiah. One talks about it being a house, the temple's a house of prayer, and instead you've turned it into a den of thieves. This is the incident where we know that Christ, what's called, cleansed the temple. He walked into the church house, the temple at that time, and he said, there's a lot of stuff in here that has no business being in the church house, and he cleared it out. He went through and changed over it. It's in all four Gospels, including the Gospel of second chapter of John, in which he said he took a whip, a strap with a piece of leather on it and some barbed wire at the end of it. I'll call it barbed wire, some kind of a leather deal. And he went around and he actually knocked a lot of the things over and whipped them around, and he knocked all the tables over. They were selling goods and services. Of course, they had to sacrifice animals in the temple in those days, and people would come to Jerusalem and didn't come with animals, and so they would come in and purchase doves, and there were people inside the temple making money selling doves. And they didn't just sell them at cost, they were making money off of it, and they were changing money. People that come to Jerusalem didn't have the same coinage as they did from their home country, and so people were making money on the exchange of currency, as we call it today. They were making money off that. A lot of people were making all sorts of money and selling goods and products, and they were using the church as a business and the temple at that time as a business. So we're, by example, Christ said that it has no place in here. You're taking from the Lord's people for your own personal benefit, taking advantage of them at this time. It's known as cleansing the temple. That's what that incident, when Jesus cleansed the temple. I spoke on it several years ago about the cleansing of the temple, and that started, got its beginning back in the Old Testament when we talk about clean and unclean. Clean things and unclean things. And if you've ever read that, it gets a little complicated. You got to go back and read what we call the first five books of Moses, the law of Moses, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Especially Leviticus and Numbers is where it lays out the law on things that are clean and unclean. It's hard reading. It's kind of boring reading. And you're going, I don't understand this, and I don't know why it's so complicated and why they had to do it. It was done for a very specific reason. That was the law of Moses. I spoke on the law of Moses here probably a year ago or so, a year and a half ago, and talked about the law of Moses, how people couldn't follow it, and therefore we think of the law as being very hard, complicated. Tried to show at that time, though, the law of Moses was very good for the people. It talked about the relationships that people have, what they can eat and not eat, how they can relate to each other, how they're to act in life. And when they followed the law of Moses, people's lives were much simpler and much better. It discouraged greed, encouraged people to have land, encouraged families to have land, families to stay together. It pointed out things you could eat and could not eat, things you could touch and could not touch. Could not do those in your personal life. Plus then, you couldn't, if you'd have been involved in anything unclean, then you couldn't come into the temple. You couldn't come into the tabernacle back in the older days and in the temple, and suggested even in the church today, you had to separate yourselves if you became unclean. Brother Kenny and I were talking this morning about the issue of depravity of man, not something that preachers like to preach on because it doesn't sound good, but that is the nature of man, is that we have a depraved nature and we will lean to sin but for the grace of God. You don't have to preach about depravity, but you have to understand that depravity. If you understand it, then you truly appreciate the grace of the Lord. Lord's grace helps us get past that natural depravity that we have. Our children are born to be sinners, and we raise them, and we train them, and we teach them. They don't have to be taught how to sin. They seem to know how to do that, and that's all of us. Still the same way, we have to be taught and conscious not to sin. That's the way it was, and it relates to being clean and being unclean. And when the Lord gave Moses the law back in those early five books, but especially in Leviticus and Numbers, he gave him a lot of laws about being clean and unclean, and it related to all sorts of things that we witness in everyday life. Particularly, it related to contagious diseases, all sorts of contagious diseases. Now, if you look, over the years, there's been many nations that have been destroyed because of uncontrolled diseases that have caused plagues and wiped out entire populations. You know, you can go down in South America and in Africa, and there's some villages down there they've seen where great temples were built to pagan gods in those times and whatever, and they don't know who lived there. They're gone. That whole population was wiped out. Many times it was wiped out because people didn't know how to live in this world. They didn't understand what we understand today. We've progressed. We've taken what the Lord has given us and learned on it and built on it. And we know about such things as germs and contagious diseases and how to control them. And if you look at the old law of Moses, though, he talked about not only contagious diseases. He set up a rule that when you get them, you quarantine yourself. You have to be quarantined. You have to separate yourself from the family. You have to separate yourself from the tribe. Separate yourself from the village. You know, probably the easiest example of that is the leprosy, but it had any issue that the Lord has outlined in that books of Leviticus and Numbers. He's outlined all these various types of things that if you get sick by them as a result of your touching some unclean thing. That's why we don't touch dead animals. You know, those are just breed germs and breed diseases. In the jungles of Africa, most of the exotic diseases we have today, even the great AIDS crisis, if you've studied about that at all, and I've tried to, the AIDS crisis started in Africa as an exotic disease, probably from monkeys, they seem to think. And then it, because of the unsanitary conditions there and the unsanitary conditions that people live in and exist in, that disease spread and spread into society. And it happened to be that AIDS, a gay man, as a flight attendant, landed in Africa and actually brought that disease back to the United States, and it spread very rapidly. But had the law of Moses been followed, that wouldn't have occurred. The great plague of England, the black plague of England, had the law of Moses been followed, that wouldn't have happened. All the great plagues that we've seen and had, smallpox and polio and all those, would not have resulted had we still been following the law of Moses. And we've learned from that. So there is a big issue about plagues and diseases and what you eat and what you touch that the Lord was addressing in these clean and unclean things. That was the purpose of it. He had created a new people. He had founded the earth and created people and made man and woman and made societies. People were savage. If you go back and read the early part of Genesis, before the flood, it said there was great wickedness and savagery among the people, and they weren't following. You know, they had lots of not only were they mean and wicked and depraved, they were sexually immature and sexually depraved also. And all those type of things bred diseases that spread and caused a lot of problems back in that day. The Lord, when he put down the law of Moses, was trying to help them live this life, not only learn how to live and worship God. To worship God, that was one of the rules. You had to be holy. You couldn't get all these diseases and all these problems and stuff and be holy. And you had to get yourself clean before you could come back in. It was all physical back then. Now, we've learned a lot since then, and we've used the minds that the Lord has given us, and things have changed. We know you couldn't eat a lot of different foods. Couldn't, you know, all the creepy, crawly things they talked about on the face of the earth. And you couldn't eat a fish, water, unless they had gills. Certain restrictions that you knew the difference between clean and unclean. the different types of hoofs that animals have. One of them we couldn't eat was pigs and hogs. We know Jewish people don't eat pork today because of that reason. We have learned a lot about that. You know, porks and hogs especially, you know, they're savages. They eat slop, as we call that, and they eat just about anything, and they're not always healthy. And we've learned a lot about, we know in the New Testament, that restriction has been removed between clean and unclean, what we can eat. That's made clear when Peter was told he could eat unclean things, and he opened up the world of unclean, and that also spiritually is referring to Gentiles too. But this ability to eat, have clean things and clean and unclean things, is what separated the Jewish people from all the other populations, all the other Gentiles. And Gentiles means everybody else. It's what separated them because the Lord had given them commandments to follow to keep them clean, that they could live properly and they could live in this world. They didn't know about germs and they didn't know about diseases. And they didn't know that after an animal died and lay there for 2 or 3 days, you didn't go in and eat it. You ate it while it was fresh dead. And all those type of things, the Lord was teaching them in these clean and unclean things. They didn't know it and didn't understand it. And, of course, with our depravity, we've got all sorts of other unsanitary things that we get ourselves involved in. And if you read those, it's a lot of detail in there, and I just want to summarize it. You know, you have any issue flowing from you, any blood flowing from you, any sores, all those type of things. The various things are detailed in there, all the things you could and could not do. That include everything like he mentions there, going to war. If you went to war, we know that soldiers are subject to a lot of bad conditions, unsanitary conditions. We know that from our own. We have in Atlanta, we have the deal called the Center for Disease Control. Is that Center for Disease? Yes, CDC. That was started back in World War I to treat the soldiers over on the battlefield. That's what that started, identify what kind of disease they have and get treatments for it. Soldiers have a lot of foot problems, a lot of foot diseases they would get in the jungles. And when they would wear, their boots and socks for days at an end and wear the clothes in heavy rains. It just gets all sorts of fungi problems that crop up. The Centers for Disease Control was created to address that. Well, if you go look in the Bible tells anytime men goes to war, they have to go through this because they're unclean in war. Not only do they engage in battle and get blood on their hands and they become, in a sense, spiritually unclean, warriors become unclean in a lot of different ways. And so before you could come back in, you had to make sure that you were, all those diseases and things were removed from you. But it separated the Jewish people from all the savage people in the world. The Jewish people had rules that they were required to follow, these dumb, stupid rules about clean and unclean. But the Lord was taking care of them. He made it commandments so that then they would get themselves and keep themselves clean. And then the end result was that then you also had to be clean before you could come back to church, before you could come back and approach the tabernacle or the temple or those type of things. And if you let too many things get in the church that are unclean, then it'll make the church like the world, like the rest of the world outside the chosen people. At that time, the chosen people, of course, were the Jewish people. Today, it's his elect. His elect are brought into that fold. We have the law of Moses, very good to follow. We don't always follow it, but be very, very good to follow it in what's going on. And if you'll know the Jewish people now, they refer to that as things are kosher. That's a good term. It's a good term for us to think about. Is that kosher? It means, is it clean? Is it something? Is it clean to eat? Is it clean to do? You know, now the Jewish people, we know from the New Testament, they got caught up in the ritual of it and forgot about the spiritual side of it. They just got to perform the rituals. You know, one time when Jesus was accused of not washing, and they said, well, you know, but the Jewish people, they wash every time they eat. They wash all the time. They made it a strict ritual of washing all the time. There's a reason that they got into the washing, because it was ritual. But it's a thing that we do today because we know to do it. We tell our kids to wash your hands. Go wash your hands before you eat. That's because the Lord required it back then. He required us to be clean and unclean. He taught us better. And we're still in that regard. That's the reason you see a lot of problems around the world, is that the law of Moses addresses things. It doesn't have anything to do with your being a child of God eternally, whether or not you get these diseases or not, but it helps you live in this world. Being clean is something that will help you in life, and it will help you in the church. and that's both physical and spiritual. You know, back in they people struggled with this for years. Only the Jewish people were the ones that managed to keep themselves in pretty good physical shape because they were required to follow the law of Moses. Didn't always follow it perfectly, but it put them in a much better shape than people who didn't follow it. We have a really good example of this back in the 1800s over in England. We had a famous doctor there. Now, he was known as Lord Lister. He was actually Dr. Lister, but he was of such renown, they made him a lord in the House of Lords, you know, a distinguished person, Lord Lister. And he was a personal physician to Queen Victoria. He was a deeply religious man, and he went back and studied the law of Moses, you know, and studied it clearly and says, how can we take what the Lord told us to do? How can we implement that into our daily livelihood? How do we implement that in our lives? And so he started studying, and he figured out there's this thing called germs that are there that are what creates problems, and they can be spread. And that's how these are being spread. That's how these diseases are being spread that the Lord tells us about. And so he created a lot of changes and recommendations in the surgery room. He said, number one, all doctors ought to wash their hands thoroughly. He said, and a lot of this stuff is spread because you don't need, you know, you operate on one guy and you got blood on your hands. It doesn't matter because the next guy is going to have blood too. I'm going to get more of it on there. But by doing that, they were commingling some of the blood and transferring the diseases. And Lister said, no, you got to wash your hands after everyone and between everyone. And he came up with a disinfectant to do that. And he disinfected all the instruments. You know, get out in the war in the battlefield sometime and you have instruments of war and you may not be able to help it. But it's important you keep your instruments clean to treat each other so that disease doesn't spread. All this came from his study of the law of Moses. And he made made people doctors and wrote papers on it and was widely accepted and is still used today. It started with Dr. Lister. You may have heard of one of the products that's been named after him, Listerine. That's named after Dr. Lister because it's a disinfectant as well as mouthwash and things, but it's a disinfectant and kills germs. That's what he specialized in because he went back and studied the law of Moses. Like I said, we've used the brain that the Lord has given us, and over a period of time, half the time we don't even realize it, but we're following the original law of Moses. I want to go back and look at a little bit of that. It didn't start just with Leviticus. It started way back further. Let me point out something to you. If you go back to Genesis 5, you don't have to. I'll tell you about it. But Genesis chapter 6, 5's at the top of the page. Genesis chapter 6 talk about the wickedness of mankind that was in the earth after Adam and Eve and they had their sons. Mankind started growing and the population started growing and the Lord looked down and said, the whole country is wicked. God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth and that every imagination of the thoughts of his hearts was on evil continually. This was before the law of Moses. The Lord looked down and said, boy, there's a problem with this growing society because they're thinking about evil all the time and they're getting themselves in all sorts of problems. And so we know that the Lord looked down and said, everybody's getting evil, but he found one man he liked, a guy named Noah. Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. So he said, I'm going to pick out this one man, and we're going to destroy the rest of the earth, and we're going to start over again with this project. Get over to chapter 7, and I never noticed this until this time. Chapter 7, the Lord said unto Noah, come thou and all thy house into the ark, for thee I have seen righteous before me in this generation. We got the ark built. He told him to build an ark, and he got him, and now he's ready to get into it. Verse 2, he says, of every clean beast. I'd never paid attention to that before. Of every clean beast thou shalt take to thee by sevens. Take to thee by sevens, the male and his female. You know, we always hear about they went into the ark two by two, and they did go into the ark two by two. But of the clean beast, you were to pick seven, and it's sevens, male and female. I believe that's seven pairs. In other words, that would be 14 head of cattle, seven male and seven female. That's what they took in with them. Every clean beast thou shalt take to thee by sevens, that's plural, by sevens, I mean the male and the female, and the beasts that are not clean by two, the male and female. So at the end, the Lord and Noah distinguished between clean and unclean. clean and unclean things to eat. Back at the time of Noah, we're still 1,000 years before Moses, for the law of Moses, but the Lord was already telling us there's clean and unclean animals. We're going to save them all, a sample of all of them, but some of them are clean and some of them are unclean. The crawling, creeping, crawling things, and the snakes and the lobsters and the shrimp, stuff that we eat today because we've learned how to cook it and we've learned how to eat it. They didn't have that back then. He says, and then also of the fowls of the air by sevens, the male and the female, to keep the seed alive, the species alive upon the face of the earth. Verse 8, of clean beasts and of the beasts that are not cleaned and of fowls and of everything that creepeth upon the earth, there went in two by two unto Noah in the ark, the male and the female, as God had commanded. Now, they did go in two by two, a male and a female. But of the clean beast, they took seven. So that would be 14 of each clean beast. And of the unclean beast, they took two. Now, if you get over here, and we're going to, you know, the ark, the rains came. I'll skip over all that. But get over to verse 20 of chapter 8. And after the ark landed, after they got it landed on dry land, it went out. And the first thing Noah did, he built an altar. Noah built an altar unto the Lord, and took of every clean beast and of every cleaned fowl and offered burnt offerings on the altar. He chose only the clean beast to offer to the Lord. It's one reason I guess they took seven. They ended up with six because he took of the clean beast to offer them to the Lord, because offering it to the Lord on the altar was holy, pointing out the cleanness required for holy. And the Lord smelled a sweet savor because Noah made a good sacrifice of a clean animal. The Lord smelled a sweet savor, and the Lord said in his heart, I will not again curse the ground any more for man's sake, for the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth, neither will I again smite any more every living thing that I have done. Noah made a good, clean sacrifice to him of clean animals, and he sacrificed, made that sacrifice, and the Lord accepted it. From there we go on over in Genesis chapter 12. Abraham built an altar, made it holy, sacrificed to the Lord. Jacob in Genesis chapter 35. Moses in Exodus 17. They all created altars to the Lord, and they all began recognizing that it's when you're worshiping the Lord, you got to be clean, you got to be holy, you got to recognize it holy. When you get into David and Solomon over in Samuel and Kings, when they built the tabernacle, the temple, David was not allowed to build it. Why? Because his hands were unclean. He had gone out and fought in wars for a long time, fought in wars, and he got blood on his hands. And the Lord says, I'm not going to let you build it because your hands are unclean. You're not a clean to build my house, the house that the people can come and worship, and I will make my presence there available. And he had Solomon build it, had David's son, we know, ended up building that. David was not allowed to build it. But then Solomon had all these huge sacrifices. And from that point forward, first the tabernacle that Moses had to build, and then the Solomon temple had to build. All the time they had to use clean animals. Not unclean, but clean animals. All the way through the temple time frame. We get up to 2 Chronicles chapter 28 and 29. I'm skipping a lot here because I want to talk about clean and unclean. And they worshiped with clean animals, and they couldn't worship with unclean. They couldn't eat them, couldn't partake of them. All that changed in the New Testament that we'll talk about. Particularly, let me just point out the fact that, you know, we eat pork these days. Jewish people still don't eat it. They don't believe in the New Testament. But we know how to cook pork. We know how to cook it and cook it good. And you don't hear the diseases that come out of pork when we cook them like you used to. We've been told it's okay to eat what was previously unclean. Again, spiritually, that refers to the Gentiles brought in to the covenant, but it also referred to Peter. Peter was told he could eat. Lower that net down, had all the unclean things in it, and eat. Kill and eat is what the Lord told. We're allowed to do that, but we now understand and we know how to do that. All the things that they did clean and unclean back in the old day, we don't have to do now because our research and our knowledge that the Lord has given us, that we've built it on, starting with the Lord Moses, we know now. They didn't know how to do this when they started out. Like I said, the Lord, they didn't have any training. They didn't know what to do. They were all savages back then. Now we're educated and we're knowledgeable and we build on that knowledge. That's what the Lord has blessed us with. And now we know how to handle it a little bit better. And all our laws of sanitation, all our lives of hygiene, all these things that we understand now and know are based on the original law of Moses, being clean and unclean. If you get over in 2 Chronicles 28 and 29, we had two kings that succeeded Solomon. We know that after Solomon died, the kingdom split, and we had all sorts of good kings and bad kings. Chronicles 28 and 29 are the stories of first a bad king, and second a good king. The first king was Ahaz, A-H-A-Z, Ahaz. And he was a bad king. And his son was Hezekiah, and Hezekiah was a good king. But Ahaz went into the temple, and he locked the doors to the temple. He took all the furniture out of all the equipment that was supposed to be in the temple and took it out. Instead, he put in it all his idols, all the idols of Baal. And he worshipped these pagan gods in the temple. Now, Jesus, what he did cleansing the temple back then, didn't have near the problem that Ahaz created in his temple. He took in a lot of things, took everything out of the temple that was supposed to be there and put in stuff that should not be there, including idols and his worship of Baal, and he locked the doors, didn't let the people come in anymore. Well, when Ahaz died, he created across the whole country idols that angered God. Chapter 29 then, after when Hezekiah came in, he came in at age 20 to be king after his father died, Ahaz. Ahaz then had polluted the temple in large part. Polluted it, put all sorts of unclean things in the worship of the Lord that had been told not to do back in the law of Moses. Hezekiah began to reign, and he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord according to all that David his father had done. And in his first year of reign, in the first month, he opened the doors to the house of the Lord and repaired them. This is him cleansing the temple. This is the first time the temple was cleansed. When Christ did it, it was back in the New Testament, but over here in the Old Testament, the first time we had a cleansing of the temple. And this is a lesson not only for our church, but for us individually. When Hezekiah came in, first of all, he did, he opened the doors to the church house. Next, he went in and he took out all the stuff that didn't belong there. He took it out. Not only did he take it out, but he took it out in the Valley of Hinnom and he burned it. He got rid of it. And then he came back and he opened the doors and he repolished it and he put the shine back on it and he restored the service. The temple, if you remember, was made of gold, inlaid with gold. He shined the gold again and made it where it would work and shine brightly and be an honor to the Lord. Two lessons in that to me. Number one is the church. Have we got the doors of the church open to everybody? Do we invite everybody in and make them welcome? That's what Hezekiah did. He went in and made sure the doors of the church are open. He examined it and made sure, listen, anything that's in there doesn't belong, let's get rid of it. And you should do that too. You should make sure that false doctrine is not preached. You should make sure that we don't have false practices going on inside the church. I hope you do that on a regular basis. That's the check that the congregation has to keep on the ministers. That's our job too, to make sure no false doctrine is preached. But we know from past history that occasionally the ministry brings false things into the church. We should do that, and if there's anything in there that shouldn't be, you should take it out and restore it and put the shine back on it. We should do that in our personal lives too. We're going to talk in a minute over there. You'll see in Apostle Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and again in chapter 6 that, speaking to the congregation as a whole, he says, you are now the temple of God. The temple is no more. It's gone. I talked about the new temple and where the Lord would come in recently. And he said, the church is now, this church, this congregation is now the temple. We're now the temple. So that duty falls on us to make sure that we keep the temple clean and shine and polished and keep everything out of it that doesn't go in, that shouldn't be there. We need to keep the temple, our church house, cleansed. But over in the 6th chapter of Corinthians, he says, also you individually are the temple of God. The Lord's inside you. He's put his laws inside you, his heart inside you. This is where the temple is now. So we need to go through the same test, don't we? We need to go through and make sure that, number one, are we open? Have we opened up our heart to every one of the Lord's people? We got bitterness. We let any bitterness or resentful, or we want to get any revenge, or we hate people, or we got any problems that we need to get out of our temple. Do we have any old grudges we hold? Do we have any old ways we'd like to hold to that the congregation does is not right for the congregation, not right for the temple, not right for our temple? That's why it's good to read and study and know the Bible, so we've studied it. And third, then, we need to put the shine back on it. We need to come to the church and be proud of that. We need to let our light so shine. You guys are here this morning. I'm preaching to the choir. You're here this morning, but we all, that's why we come. It's not only for us to be here and for the blessing we get out of this for ourselves, but for each other. By here, you're letting your light shine for each other. That's an important function, and the Lord will bless that. He'll bless you for being here today, and He'll bless you for come and opening up His temple. But you have a good example here about two priests, kings, that presided over the temple. One closed it and shut it down, and the other opened it up, and we'll see Hezekiah got a great blessing out of coming back in and cleaning the temple. But one of the things he did, he didn't just take things out that didn't belong there and go put them in storage. You know, a lot of times when I've got to get rid of stuff that I know I've got to get rid of and I don't want to, I'm going to put it in the garage and store it, so I keep it. If I'm going to keep it, that means I'm not really getting rid of it. You know, if I've got some things that don't belong, some videos or magazines or books or whatever in my life that gets in the way of my worshiping the Lord, if I take it and put it out in the garage, I want to save it, then I hadn't gotten rid of it. Hezekiah says, take it out and burn it. Get it out of your lives. If you just take it out and store it away somewhere, that means you're storing it away for future use. You know, I've got a lot of stuff I put in storage that I can't get rid of it, but I know I will keep it because I might have it sometime. I moved out of a larger house and put a lot of stuff in storage. I've been paying storage on it now for 10 or 12 years. I need to get rid of some of it. I'm just paying storage on it because I think I'll get it back, and I'm not going to get it back. I've turned my life a different direction. We ought to look at doing that when we're in the church. We got to go out and anything. Don't take it out and store it, but go get rid of it. I got one specific example I want to give to you, and that's out of the book of Numbers. Book of Numbers is back where they talked about being clean and being unclean. Book of Numbers chapter 31. The Jewish people were having trouble with the Midianites, and that's all the Amorites, the Hittites, all those people that surrounded them, the Midianites. They surrounded the Jewish nation there in the Holy Land, and they were giving them trouble all the time. And so the Lord told Moses, go out, arm yourself, get your men armed for battle, let them go out against the Midianites and beat them. And so they put together an army of 12,000 people, 1,000 from each one of the 12 tribes. And they sent them out. And they went out with instruments of war. The Lord blessed them. The Lord commanded them to go out and do it. And so they had the Lord on their side. Verse 8, and they slew the kings of Midian, besides the rest of them that were slain. And it goes through and tells all the various people they slain. They destroyed all the idols worship. And the children of Israel took all the women of Midian captives and all the little ones and took all the spoil, all their cattle and all their flocks and all their goods. And they burnt all their cities wherein they dwelt and all the goodly castles with fire. And they took all the spoil, took all the gold, all the silver, and all their idols. Now they took all these things, and when they got back, and Moses says, well, and the Lord told him, you can't go back into the camp yet. They wouldn't let him. He said, number one, you've taken a lot of women here, and they had committed immoral acts with a lot of the women of the Midianites. They didn't kill them all like the Lord told them to. They took them. He said, therefore now, kill every male among the little ones, and kill every woman who hath known man by lying with him. You've committed unclean acts with these Midianite women. But all the women children, that have not known a man by lying with him, keep alive for yourselves. You can marry those women; they're clean. And do you abide without the camp? You cannot come back in to join the families. You cannot come back in and join the rest of Israel. Whosoever, anybody that's killed any person, whosoever has touched any slain, purify both yourselves and your captives on the third day. Purify all your garments. Had to take all their garments and wash them. Clean them all. Clean everything they had with them and clean it. And he says, if you got anything that's made of gold or silver or brass or tin or iron, you got to put it to the fire and melt it down. That's how you purify it. Clean it. Anything you've captured, you had to clean up. Get it clean. All of you men have got blood on you. You've touched unclean things. You've been perhaps sleeping with women you shouldn't have been sleeping with, which is a continual problem when men go to war. a lot of the diseases the Center for Disease Control had to address in World War II and World War I, you'll find, if you ever visit that facility, you'll be astounded at the sexually transmitted diseases that they had to address in that. That's the nature of wars. That's one of the nature and unclean things of war. And it says you have to clean everything, wash it all, clean it all, clean it by fire, and you've got to stay out until you get yourself clean. You can't come back in. And you shall wash your clothes on the seventh day, and you shall be clean, and afterwards then shall be able to come into the camp. They have to go through this long purification process to be able to come to camp. That's when people go to war. How does that impact us today? It impacts us spiritually today. I know all of you in here, you get out here, leave this church house today, and you're going to go back, and you got to go back to work, or you got to be in this world, or you got to deal with the people you got to deal with. You're in war every day in this world. It's a pain to live in. It's a pain. You got problems at work. You got problems at home. You got problems with economics. You got problems with bill collectors. You fight this battle every day in war. It's a war that you're going through. And when you get ready for Sunday, you come in here. Before you come to church, you need to get yourself clean. You need to cleanse yourself to come to church. Now, how do you do that? Number one, you pray. Get yourself ready to come to church. Don't just get up on Sunday morning and rush in here. You won't get the blessing that the Lord tells us we get when we cleanse our mind. We're talking about spiritually now. You got to get rid of the problems and the cares of this world to come to church. That's hard to do. I drive to church and I start thinking about some problem that I've got to get through today so that I can dress Monday morning. That's not what I should do. I got to clear my mind and say, Lord, help me clear my mind that I can go in and enjoy the blessings that come. We don't have problems in here. When we come in here with a cleansed heart and a clean mind, you're not going to have the problems in here that you do out in the world. And you're probably going to see a way to get through them, the Lord's help. You get yourself, your mind and your body ready to come to church every time you come. Do that by reading your Bible. You know, I remember back in a time when I'd see my dad, and especially both my granddads, they'd be reading the Bible on Saturdays. That's how they did. Saturday after they worked half a day, they'd come in and they'd read their Bibles and they'd get themselves ready for Sunday morning. They get their mind cleansed and in a good place. If you come in here thinking about your problems, then you're going to miss the blessings that the Lord provides, not me or Brother Kenny, but the blessings that the Lord provides. You're coming into His place and it's holy. You're the temple. You need to take care of the temple. If you take care of the temple like you're supposed to and keep it clean, then that means the day before, clean it out even good the day before. You do that by prayer, by reading your Bible, by study, by meditation. If you do that on Sunday morning, get up on Sunday morning and I'm going to church. I don't want to just rush to church and get there as quick as I can. I want to think about what I'm doing. I need to stop. Say, Lord, clear my mind of all my problems in the world. They're going to be there Monday morning. You don't have to worry about them. Cleanse them out of me today. Let me go to church and let me enjoy the blessings that come only from you. Over in John, the Lord speaking here in the book of John, chapter 16. He says, these things I have spoken unto you, that in me ye might have peace. In the world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. Whatever tribulation you have in the wars of this world, the daily wars we have at work, at school, with our families, with our finances, you know, with drug issues, with alcohol problems, with gambling, with sex, whatever they are out here, Lord says, cleanse yourself and come to church. I'll give you peace from those problems. He'll give you peace and a blessing that you won't get anywhere else. He's been doing it for 4,000 years. He's good at it. He understands it. And when we follow him, we get a tremendous blessing. The Jewish people survived over a lot of nations that went under because of all the plagues they got themselves into because they didn't know how to keep themselves clean and wouldn't have but for the Lord. Same way today with our minds. We don't live in that physical world anymore. We live in a spiritual world with our Lord. He tells us if we'll keep our mind and our body clean, keep ourselves cleansed before we come in to his temple. Keep in mind, your temple is here and your temple is here. Keep your mind cleansed, especially when you come to church to enjoy. Put yourself in the presence of others that come here to worship. The Lord sees that. He's good at giving peace. He knows how. And he tells us that he's a rewarder of those that diligently seek after him. You get your mind in the right shape to come to church, the Lord blesses that. He'll give you a peace you won't get anywhere else. You've been very kind to me with your attention, and my prayer is the Lord richly bless you.